hurt my thumb. It's the 7th of March, and we have an exam coming up on Tuesday. See, the whole weekend of study, right? All that material from chapter 5, all that material from chapter... Where's your hand up? Get out your stuff. Get out your paperwork. Get out your calculator. All that material from chapter 5, and then what we've been doing the last couple of sessions on stock valuation. So we're going to go over the worksheet number 2. So we're going to do it again. And you need a calculator, Scantron, one page of notes, that formula sheet, the present value tables. I will have some extra copies of the formula sheet and the present value tables. Assignment number 5 is due today, so if you have it, turn it in. There's a stapler up here. If you need a stapler. So any questions, any thoughts? Any ideas? Ready to get started? Yes? Yes? Do you have anybody have a good joke? It's okay. I'll get it. No, what are you doing? What are you doing? Come on, do it later. Do it later. Sit down. Do it later. Come on. You got class. Sit down. Okay, anybody got a good joke? Nobody has a good joke? Did I tell you about the alligator walking in the car? How about the mushroom and the bear? And the... Did I tell you about the vampires?
Yeah.
Okay, how about the skeleton that walked into the bar?
Yeah.
No, yeah. So the skeleton walks into a bar. Have you heard this one before? And the skeleton goes in the bar and he orders, come on out, come on, get inside. So the skeleton orders a beer and a mop. The skeleton orders a beer and a mop. Because he's a skeleton, right?
Oh, my God.
So you gotta bring good jokes, folks. Because they get worse. It's hard to.
Funeral, I want to tell a joke.
What?
Funeral,
I want to
tell a joke.
You do? Tell jokes at your funeral?
Yeah.
Okay. So we had gone through the dividend discount models, up to and including my favorite, the discounted cash flow models. We did the worksheet number 1. We're going to do worksheet number 2 today, which is exactly like worksheet number 1, which is exactly like the assignment sheet, which I've handed out, and will be exactly like the calculations on the exam on Tuesday. So this is where we ended up with our sources of information. This is all great. We do all these calculations, but where do we get this historical information? Who decides what next year's earnings are going to be? Sales per share, cash flow per share, dividends per share, let alone 3 to 5 years from now. Well, one of the best, there are lots of sources. There are many, many good sources. There are a whole lot more horrible sources. But one of the best sources, and this is where we left off, was the value line. The value line has been around for decades. And there are some people who consider it old-fashioned, stodgy, fuddy-duddies. But I'll tell you, folks, you look at their past performance, you know, it's not perfect, nobody is, but it's pretty darn good. But as we said, it's not cheap. $50 a month if you want to buy it for yourself in the print edition. The online edition has been coming down in price. This is the official price, but I see that they've been offering it for a lot less. Because, hey, it doesn't cost them anything. It doesn't cost them anything more to do. You just log on and you download what you need. I'm a big fan of the value line. And one study, which ignored transaction costs and tax consequences, only used their timeliness indicator. It showed how you would have beaten the market handsomely over a 20-year period by just buying and selling stocks as they received and lost their number one timeliness designation. They have a few numbers that we'll take a look at. And the one that they did this, it said if you just bought it when it became one and sold it when it didn't become one, you would have done incredibly well. Now, what? Hang on a minute. We're going to see the sheet, and it has a timeliness, meaning, hey, we think it's a good time to buy this stock. And so when it hits one, that means it's the most timely. When it goes below 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, then, hey, we don't think it's the best time to buy it. So you buy it when it hits one. You sold it when it went below one, you would have done really well. Now, is that going to happen in the future? I don't know. But you understand? Hang on a minute. Okay. And so we're going to take a look at this. This is from your book. This is from the 6th edition. And this is the value line. There's the timeliness. You see? When this hits one, that's what they were saying. They were saying, if you just, because this is value lines, these are the subjective analyses, and they're objective analysis. There's all the objective information. And whether it's safe or not, if it's one, that means it's a pretty safe stock. And then technical, we'll talk about technical analysis later on. But look at all this data. It's a sip from the fire hose. But remember we said the last 5 years, average price to earnings ratio, the last 5 years, sales to price, price to sales ratio when we did the price ratio models, and how are we going to know what the dividends are for the next 3 years? Well, take a look here. In 2009, the dividends per share, where are they? Here. The dividends per share were 90 cents. They expected them in 2010 to be 90 cents. And then by 2014, they expect them to go up to $100 to $1.10. Do you understand? So here, that's what their projections are. Now, obviously,
McGraw-Hill didn't put their information.
Well, Value Line is an analyzing McGraw-Hill. And you can just know that some of the people at McGraw-Hill were not happy about this. Why? Because they're the ones who made your textbook. And they have a company called, you might have heard of Standard & Poor's. You ever heard of Standard & Poor's? Well, Standard & Poor's has their own analysis sheets that look just like this. They're not as good. I haven't seen them in several years, so I don't know if they've gotten any better. I should go down to the library and take a look at them, but I doubt they've changed. And so when the authors said, well, we want to put the value line in the book, they said, well, can't you use S&P sheets? No, we want to use value line. You understand what I'm saying? If you don't worry about it. I'm just thinking they're like, oh, damn it. But they used their company. They did their company to analyze value line. So look what happens. Here in 2009, late 2009, they thought the price in 2013, 2014, was going to be between 48 and 65. Want to take a look at what McGraw-Hill is doing? We didn't take a look at our stocks either. I'm probably going to go back here. So here, how are we doing on our stocks? Not bad, 2.5%. Would you be happy with that over 8 weeks? Even though the market, what? I know, Apple's still dropping. Boy, I'll tell you, Apple, I don't know. I think so. It's 420 now, 419. But let's take a look at McGraw-Hill, MHP, McGraw-Hill Companies. And what did they say it was going to be? Between 48 and 60 something? And it's not quite 40. Pretty good.
It was
a little over, yeah. So, do you understand now why we say 3, 4, 5 years? Because that's about as far as you can see into the future with any kind of reliability. I mean, it's not even reliable, but that's how far the experts, such as Value Line, think they can do into the future. Okay, so that's the top part. And then there's all this data here, all the sales, operating margin. We'll discuss that later on when we get to chapter 17, financial statements. And then here's the bottom where they have historical data, annual rates, past 5 years, past 10 years, estimates to 2012 to 2014, this was late 2009, sales, earnings per share, dividends paid. Here is their analysis, and they do usually a pretty good job of describing it, and this is what Peter Lynch would say. He would say, after you've done all your calculations, after you've done all your work, create a 90-second, two-minute story about the company. And see if, after you've done all your calculations, throw them away, and just, would you be interested in this company? And that's what Value Line does. They write about, if you read this, it takes a couple minutes to read, and you go, you know, these shares are untimely. We don't think it's a great time to buy, but the near-term picture is concerning us, given recent earnings shortfalls. But if you have a 3 to 5 year time frame, we think it's pretty good. Are you excited?
5 years, not yet.
Yeah. Well, this was in 2009, and they did pretty good. So let's put Value Line to the test. In late 2009, the price of McGraw-Hill was $28.73. Their price prediction for early 2013 was in the 48 to 68. And a few weeks ago, it was 45. Now it's up to 48. Not too bad. Actually, pretty darn good. When they made this prediction at the end of 2009, now you got to go back. That was right after we were starting to claw ourselves back after the stock market debacle. The stock market had rallied from the depths of the 2008-2009 crisis, but many people were still predicting the end of the world. And, by the way, many people are still predicting the end of the world. So now take a look at the fourth edition. Anybody have the fourth edition? The value of the book. Here, the fourth edition said, hey, it is mid-2005, and we think by 2008, 2009, 10, it should be between, say, 68 and 82. All right? So mid-2005, it's sitting at 47 bucks. We think it's going to be 68. You have the fourth edition, so that's where it's from. And let's see what happened. Their price prediction for late 2009 was in the range from around 66 to 82. And in late 2009, it was hovering around 24. It had dropped in almost half. What happened? Well, it reached $70 in mid-2007, basically where they thought it was going to be, earlier than they thought it was going to be. And started falling as the credit market started reacting to the home mortgage loan crisis. Remember that McGraw-Hill owns Standard & Poor's, and Standard & Poor's was one of the companies responsible for saying, sure, don't worry, we're gonna rate these home loan mortgages as AAA. No problem. These people are lying about their income, but don't worry, they'll pay their mortgages as they go from $1,600 a month to $2,000 a month to $2,600 a month to $3,200 a month. It then plummeted as the home mortgage loan crisis spread to the entire financial sector, and their mid-2007 prediction from the fifth edition was even uglier, because that's when it just started, everyone started to realize, uh-oh, we're in trouble. But what about their early 2003 prediction? Well, in early 2003, this is from the third edition, they believed that the price was about $55. Now, you got to remember, it's split. So it was actually like $26, $28. But it was $55, and they believed that it split 2-for-1, so the price went down, double shares, when the price went down. We're going to see that in a minute. Hang on a minute. So this is, forget the last ones. $55, they believed it was going to be between 90 and, say, 110. Right? That's what they were saying. And Valueline predicted that the price of McGraw-Hill would be around 90 bucks to 110 in 2005 and 6. Why so much higher? So McGraw-Hill split their stock 2-for-1. So the price went down in half, but the number of shares went up. You have to divide these prices by 2 to compare them to the previous 2 predictions. Hooray for the Valueline! Folks, they were bang on the money. Bang on the money, because McGraw-Hill reached the $120 level by mid-2006. And what happens is I get a kick when some investors trash the Valueline. They say, those old fuddy-duddies, they're afraid, they're not traders. They're not traders. They have some, if you read their materials, they have some things they say, well, we think these are going to do well in the next year. But where they really shine is the 3-, 4-, 5-year time frame. And you remember mutual funds, their turnover ratios? We were looking for a mutual fund that had a turnover ratio of 30, 20, 25%. Why? Because that meant they were keeping stocks on an average of 3, 4, 5 years. Are you with me? 33% would be 3 years, 25% would be 4 years, and 20% would be 5 years. So good money managers have that 3, 4, 5 year time frame. Doesn't mean it's going to work, right? Everything doesn't work, but you're tilting the odds in your favor. They make mistakes just like everybody else. I remember reading, this is what I do for fun. I go to libraries, don't tell people, And now they don't have it in Southwestern anymore. So Point Loma, though. I live near Point Loma, so I go to the Point Loma Library. But Chula Vista downtown has it. And I just get lost in it. It's huge. It's this big, and then it's that big, depending where they go. Some places just break it up into like 20 different ones. But they were in late 2008, they were going, you know, things don't look so good, but we think we'll be able to muddle through. Things are looking really bad. Things look really bad. And you can just tell they're going, well, what do we tell people? We'll tell them the truth. Things don't look so good. But every week they're coming out with new. What they do is they cycle through. I'm going to take a look at the bonus assignment in a second. But they have thousands of stocks that they watch, thousands. And so they have hundreds of people doing the research. And so they cycle through every week. There's new ones that come out, and eventually I don't know how long the cycle takes. Probably about 3 months. They cycle through all the companies every 3 months or so. And it's wonderful reading. The people who trash them, I would sure love to see how those investors' long-term results stack up against the long-term results of the value line. Who do you think would have the better results, huh? I would bet on the value line. And that, folks, is chapter 6. Yes? The timeliness is just their belief of whether or not this is the best time to buy the stock. 2 is pretty good because it's 1 to 5, right? And they think that 2 is pretty good. Now, when it hits 1, they think now is the best time to buy the stock. No, I'm just saying that was one study. I'm not saying you should do that. But I'm just saying somebody went back in time 20 years and took a... They're always looking for correlations and all kinds of stuff coaxed out of the data. And they said, look, if you had just bought these stocks as they turned number 1, timeliness, and as soon as they went down to 2, 3, whatever, 4, that then you sold them, you would have done well. There was another study that went throughout the 2000s. If you had simply bought new stocks on using a mutual fund or however you did it, on the last day of every month, and then sold them on the first day, the last day of the 1 month, and then it goes to the next month, the first day, sold them on that month, you would have done phenomenally. Now, I don't know why. They say, well, it's because people have a tendency to put in their contributions for their mutual funds or their contributions for their stock investments on the first of the month. I don't know. But you can bet good money that if it worked 10 years in the past, is it going to work 10 years in the future? Maybe. But is it a guarantee? No, I don't think so. So let's take out the first sheet from Chapter 6 that says common stock valuations. You left it at the girlfriend's house, right? Okay. Common stock valuations. The very first sheet that has all the chapter terms and the chapter sections. On the back is a bonus assignment. Okay, who needs one? You gotta get organized, folks. Three hole punch. You gotta get organized. Get a 3-hole punch. Get a 3. Okay, or just get next to somebody. On the back is a bonus assignment, and so this. You don't have to do that. We saw the one investor who just bought the stock because somebody told her it was going to go up in 8 months. She didn't even know the name of it. But I don't want you to be that type of investor. You, I hope, will be a much more chapter 6. Very good. Back in chapter 6. You will be the kind of investor that looks ahead, that looks in the past, obviously, but looks ahead, looks at what's going on. The bonus. No, here. Okay. Get a turn it over there. Okay. Get a 3-ring binder. Get a hole. I need to bring a hole punch in. We used to have one in the office, but we don't have it anymore. So let's take a look at the bonus assignment. Take a trip to the library. You know where the library is in Chula Vista, folks? No. Right downtown. No, it's 4th and F, right? Right by the police station, right by 3rd and F, where the downtown little area is.
Okay, it's right there. It's a library. It's really, it's a books and videos and computers. What? There's a steak place close to us, right? Good, excellent. All right, so sadly, Southwestern's library no longer has it because we have budget cuts. Consult the value line. Now, what they're going to do is they're not going to let you take it out of the library, but do it there. And you get these stack of things. There are two parts of it. The huge stack, which may have, you know, might be in separate binders, it might be in one big binder, has all the sheets that we saw, these sheets. The first binder, which may be about that big, has their current market commentary and the index. So if you look up a company, you want to look up McGraw-Hill, you go on the index, look up McGraw-Hill, it says, oh, it's sheet number, where did it go? It should be over here. They don't have the sheet. Where's the sheet number? They don't have the sheet number, but there's a sheet number, like 2000. You'll see it when I show you the examples. Okay, so perform the value following valuation model calculations. So what you're going to do is basically worksheet number one. And we're going to do worksheet number two together. And the assignment sheet that I gave you and what's going to be on the exam. You do the same things. But now what you have to do is you have to coax some of the data out. Obviously, Value Line gives you. Do you have chapter 6 bonus assignment PO? Okay. You coax some of the data out either by calculating it or just using Value Lines. Question? You don't have it either. Okay. You need these. You've got to get organized, folks. The one per what? You need one too. Yeah, right. Okay. Okay. Pass these back. Just look at hers. Well, yeah, she's cute. Look at hers over there. And so now when you do this, you could make up. You can use what Value Line says. You could make your own decisions. It's all up to you. Because remember, we're just basically blowing smoke. We're, you know, listening to, trying to see which way the wind's blowing. Listen, putting our ear to the ground. We're forecasting. And after we're done, what do we do with the data? Throw it away and make our decision about whether we want to own McGraw-Hill or Coca-Cola or McDonald's or whatever. Got it? Okay? And at the bottom is a list of the companies that, one of which or two of which I want you to use. I would prefer that you use some large cap, multinational, dividend paying stock because that's what it works best with. If you're using something more subjective, I'm not subjective, more aggressive, such as the biotechnology companies that don't pay any dividends, that don't have any earnings, it doesn't work as well. Get back to chapter 6. The back of chapter 6. Yes, that one right there. The back right there. And it is a bonus assignment. All right? So any questions on that? Yeah, they have it. And on the website are a list of the San Diego libraries that have it. So if you go to the website, there's a list. Here it is. The Value Line is available at Chula Vista Library and San Diego Central Libraries. And it's also available at selected San Diego branch libraries. So who else? Anybody close by?
Downtown?
Downtown.
Skyline.
Point of Skyline. Where's Skyline?
Yeah.
Do what we're doing with... Okay, so nothing really close. I was hoping it would be down in Otay or...
Yeah, right.
No. Okay. All right. So now, any questions on that? So does that excite you?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, let's take a look at some of the companies that we looked at before. And remember, we looked at Johnson & Johnson. And so, how do we say that their dividends have been growing at 8%. Well, there. Can you see that? Maybe James, would you mind turning it down? On the right-hand side, turn it down twice. On the right-hand side, down twice. Right, down twice. One more. Look, there are the dividends growing. You see them growing? Dividends per share? You see that? And then they're saying that they believe the stock is going to be paying $3.30 by 2017, 2018. And they believe the price, which is now $75.80, is going to be between $90 and $110.
So you see how you could use the discounted cash flow model by just consulting the value line? Now, does it mean it's going to happen?
No.
Can they be horribly wrong?
Yes.
Everyone should say yes. Wait till I ask. Does it mean it's going to happen?
No.
Is it, can they be horribly wrong?
Yes.
Good. So it's just, I believe, tilting the odds. I thought I could have said that already. All right, anyway. So would you buy Johnson & Johnson? Would you like to see your stock go from $75 to $100 over the next 4 or 5 years?
Yes.
I would. How about Procter & Gamble?
Always.
Oh, well, they don't. What do they? They give it a time limit of only 3. But still, you see the dividends growing. You see the sales per share growing. You see the earnings per share growing. And we're looking at $2.29 this year, up to $3 dividends in 2017 or so. I don't know about you, but that sort of makes me happy. And then they say, this neutrally ranked blue chip remains a worthwhile selection for most investors. Their stock is ranked number one highest for safety, which should assure the conservative crowd. And now we're not talking about politics. We're talking about people who are afraid of losing their money. We like the long-term revenue growth prospects, too, and think ongoing restructuring will lead to better operating and profit margins down the road. Thus, 3 to 5 year capital appreciation potential is decent and fairly well defined. Finally, the dividend yield is good, and it should remain above or at 3% for the foreseeable future. Now, Coca-Cola, rock and roll, sugar water, is selling at $37, and they believe it's going to be 50 to 60 or so in the next 3 years. Would you be happy with that kind of appreciation? Some people, no. I want a lot better than that. Other people, I'm excited with that kind of appreciation I want. You see their dividends growing. I mean, you look at that growth rate, dividends, unbelievable. Sales per share growing. All the other data you're going to take a look at, some of it's not going to make any sense. What do they give it? They still give it a time, I'm sorry? The dividends from $1.10 now, around $1.10 right now, it's up to about $1.45. Which is pretty good, folks. That's a healthy growth rate. And they say, we've slipped them a notch in timeliness. We don't know if it's the best time, but offering decent appreciation potential, the 2015, 2017. There's the big number I was telling you about. That's the number you're going to look for. When you go in the index, you'll look for that number, then you have to flip through the pages and find 1750. And so I had to write in some of the numbers that didn't copy well. But here we're looking at recent price of $21. They think 3 to 5 years, 30 to 45, 48. Pretty good. Would you buy GE? They only give it a timeliness of 3. And all right. Altria. Well, who are Altria? Ziggy's, really old name for Philip Morris. They don't really have too much of a big price appreciation. Price is about $33, but they're looking at it might go down and up to like 46 or so over the next 3 years. But look at those dividends. Wee doggies. This is when they spun off Kraft and they spun off Philip Morris International, so the dividends went down. That's because they took pieces of the company away. But lately, the dividends have been growing pretty nicely, and they think they're going to go from $1.76 to $2.18. What do they say at the very bottom? These shares should appeal to income-oriented investors. Remember, equity income? You're not interested in capital appreciation. You're interested in dividends because the dividend yield is, what, 5%? Altria, timeliness and safety, despite the bevy of regulatory difficulties facing the tobacco industry, they're poised to weather the storm with strong cash flow and increasing profit. So what was it? What was the 5.4%? Well, wait till you see what bonds are paying. These are paying a whole lot better than bonds. Now, so you guys go, but those are stodgy blue chip companies paying dividends. I want something exciting. I want something sexy. You want something exciting and sexy?
Yeah,
with huge, strong. Have you ever heard of a little company called Apple?
Yeah.
Yeah?
paying 2%. The price went up to $700 last year when everybody was bang, hey, hey, everybody gets excited. It's down, when this was written to $520, now it's down to $420. But look at what they think it's going to be worth, 2015, 16, 17. Anywhere from around $900,000 up to $1,300, $1,400. So people will say Value Line, they're stodgy. They don't make bold predictions. I don't know about you, but that's a pretty darn bold prediction. So we're looking at $400 and $420 bucks for Apple right now, and they're thinking the price is going to triple in 2, 3, 4 years.
What did they think
Apple was going to be at this? Well, you have to go back a few years and see what their predictions were. I can almost assure you that they didn't see 2012 when it dropped, when it went from when it was. This is what people, and I was at a party this last the fall, and this woman, you know, all the Botox, all this plastic surgery, you know, had a sport utility Lombard, and she was so angry at Apple, so angry at the stock market, so angry at those crooks on Wall Street, because she had bought Apple, I think it was about 600, she wrote it up to 700, now it was down to 520 or so. And I kept trying to explain to her, but this is a very volatile stock. This company, if they execute what they said they're going to do, if they do this Apple TV, right, or iTV, or whatever else it's going to be called, they could double their earnings. Because what do Americans do more than anything else?
Watch TV.
Watch TV. And they'll click on this, and they'll click on that, and they'll buy the snake knife set, and the ice crusher, and the ab workout machine that they think is going to do all by itself. They don't have to work themselves. So I kept trying to explain to her, and she goes, well, I'm never going to buy stock things. I said, well, that's your choice, but Apple could explode. Are people, every time they come out with a new product, are people going to line up around the block at midnight or wherever to buy their new product? Do you think that's going to happen?
Yeah.
If you think it's going to happen, you want to buy a bunch of Apple right now. Because their earnings, I mean, what's their PE? We look at their PE, right? It's under 10. That's low. That's incredibly low. That's what you give to companies like GM and the old, stodgy old company. Anyway, so what do you think? What's the timeliness? Timeliness is 3. It's kind of scary. Let's see what they say. So you're going to check the Value Line?
Yeah.
This issue, which while now just an average 3 year ahead choice, appears to be a huge bargain at these prices. There are some legitimate concerns here, mostly notably stepped on competition from Android-powered mobile devices. But Apple's growth prospects are still considerable, and the rollout of a smart TV rumored in late 2003 should prove to be another major catalyst for the company. Consequently, we encourage the long-term investors to build positions at this juncture.
Build
positions. Isn't that a great way of saying
buy
some stocks? Yeah. Yeah. What's your position? But I think, I don't know, my mind works in very strange ways. Build positions. Interesting position. How do they do it? I'm sorry, go ahead.
What they mean is buy it.
Buy it, yeah, right. That's what they're trying to say. They got to come up with fancy ways of saying, yeah, buy it, you goofball.
Buy this.
You got five shit right here. So what do you think? What do you think of Value Line? Are you excited?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay, good. I hope so. I don't know. Okay, please, James. Lights in the back on. I try to get people excited in... Because I'll tell you, I know I'm crazy. You might think I'm crazy. You might be right. But this stuff just excites me all no end. It just really gets me excited. Okay, so let's turn this off. All right, and let's do worksheet number 2. Now, I'm so glad that many of you showed up today because these calculations are going to be on the exam in the same order. The only thing that'll change will be the names of the companies and the numbers, okay? And the reason I tell you that, not because I'm trying to be nice, is because I want you to learn it! I want you to learn it. Where it gets really frustrating is the online students. The online students just refuse. They just leave the questions blank. And I say, look, you don't understand. You have to learn this. I'm going to ask you these same questions on every exam for the rest of the semester.
You're going to learn how to do dividend discount models, discounted cash flow models, or you will just hate me. You will just hate. You might hate me both ways, but I'm just saying this is the one thing you're going to learn is how to do these models before the end of the semester. All right, so let's go through these fairly quickly. The price of Walt Disney. Have you ever heard of them? The Walt Disney Company, Disney, is currently around $55.20 a share. And this is what the book in the 4th, 5th, and 6th edition uses as the next example for the price ratio models. Yes?
50 cents. Yeah.
What do I do? Oh, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. This is, they use Disney. First they use Intel to go through the exercises, then they go through Disney. And it turns out, and I think the reason they're doing that is because they say, look, Intel, not as good. These models don't work very well for Intel, but they work a lot better for a more stable company such as Disney. And when I say stable, I'm not trying to say Intel's not stable, but the technology is unstable, so you never know what's going to happen next. Whereas kids are going to be screaming and hollering to go to Disneyland and buy $30, $40 pieces of crap from Disney. Yeah, $6 Cokes and $5 churros. Okay, so their earnings per share, what are their earnings per share? $3.10. So we go to Value Line or we compute it and we find the 5-year average PE, 5-year average price to earnings ratio at 18. Do we already have this sheet?
Yeah, for a formula sheet.
Yeah, that's the formula sheet. The formula sheet right there. Get the formula sheet out with the present value tables on the back. The formula sheet with the present, we won't need them until we get to number 5, 6. But right, there's the formula sheet. Okay, James, got everything? Okay, good man. All right, now, the analysts or Value Line or Yahoo or we just think that they're going to grow their earnings by 14%. And so the formula is very easy. We do what? Anybody remember?
Historical.
You start with a 5-year historical price to earnings ratio, which is 18. Everybody see that? It says 18. We multiply that by our current earnings per share, which is, Joe says, is $3.10. Right? And then we multiply that times 1 plus the earnings per share growth rate. And I know you all studied this over the last week.
Exactly.
Okay. And so what is 1 plus the growth rate of?
1.14.
Yeah, right. 14%, which is 0.14 or 1.14. Do you remember this from last Thursday? So it's a very simple calculation. 18 times 3.1 times 1.14 gives us $63.61. So if that 14% earnings growth materializes and they stay around that 5-year average PE, then we expect the stock to move to $63.61. Now, does that mean it's going to? Everyone should say no. Wait till I hear. Come on, don't go. Does that mean it's going to happen?
No,
it doesn't mean it's going to happen, but that's our prediction. All right, number 2 is going to be exactly the same. So Disney's cash flow per share, CFPS, right? Did I do that right? No. CFPS, right. Cash flow per share is equal to $4.45. And we go back 5 years, or we go look on Value Line, or we get it from some other place, and we find that the 5-year average cash flow per share is equal to, whatever it is, 13. You see that, everyone? Go like this if you don't understand what's going on. Go help. All right.
And we look at Value Line, or we come up with this number, or we take a look at what the analysts say, and next year they believe that the cash flow per share is going to grow by 10%. Growth of cash flow per share.
So we do the exact same calculation.
Any questions? Am I going too fast? Excuse me. My apologies.
Okay. So take the five-year average, which is, everyone should say?
13.
What's the five-year average?
13.
Times the current cash flow per share,
$4.45.
Times 1 plus the growth rate of?
10.
Thank you, Joe. But I need everybody else in there. What's the growth rate? Blanca, are you going to make some sense? Going too fast? Demasiado?
Right.
What?
It only went up 0.2.
Right. I don't know yet. Hang on a minute. We haven't done it yet. We're getting ahead of ourselves. So that's 1.10. So 13 times 5, 4.45. Times 1.10,
$63.
So these are fairly close to one another, aren't they? These predictions are fairly close to one another. But again, you want to avoid the illusion of precision. We're just, you know, blowing smoke here. We're just, you know, we're just predicting the weather. Question, Joe?
No.
Okay. All right. So number three. The same thing, except this time we're using sales per share, and their current sales per share is $20.32, and their five-year average ratio is 2.7, five-year average, and the analysts are saying, well, we think that Disney's going to grow their sales next year by 8%. So we do the exact same calculation. What do we take? 5 year average.
2.7 by 20, 32.
Yeah, Victor's on it. Make sure everybody. Yeah? Okay, nod your heads, yes? Okay, good. So the current sales per share, $20.32, times the it doesn't matter which. You math. You guys know that math is commutative. You could do it either way, but it doesn't matter. Let's start with 2.7 as the 5 year average, times the sales per share of 20.32, times 1 plus the 8%, which all of you now know is 1.08. And what do we get?
59.25.
So this is a little bit less than the other two, based on their sales growth. All right? Okay, those are the price ratio models. They're at the back of the chapter. I put them first because I find them a little easier. I have extra copies. And remember, these are on the website. On the website, there's answer keys, commentaries. Yeah, I know. Number four. Okay, now, number four, we move to the dividend discount models. CenterPoint Energy, and that's a real company, you can look it up, is a utility company. Hint, 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 a utility. Do utilities grow fast?
No.
So which model should we use? Zero growth. Right, the utility model is currently around $20.40. That's the market price. And it has been consistently paying dividends, not growing their dividends, but consistently paying dividends of 83 cents. And we consider that they will continue to do so into the future. And we're expecting a required rate of return to be 5%. So what's the zero growth model? Anybody remember?
It's on here.
Exactly. Take the annual dividends and divide them by your required rate of return. And that's on the formula sheet. So we believe, according to the zero growth model, I don't know, let's do it.
What's the annual dividend?
83 cents divided by 5%, which is 0.05. And what do you think?
$16.60.
With a market price of $20.40, is this a good buy for us?
No.
Not really. No, kind of poopy. We'd have to lower our required rate of return for us to think it was a good deal. Or, you know, basically go somewhere else. Say, forget it. Look elsewhere. Make sense?
Yes.
Okay, great. Let's down. No. The market price, right. If the market price were under 16, then we say, yeah, we can buy a stock that we believe is worth $16.60, and the market's going to give it to us for less. Okay?
All right, now number five.
Wait, Molly, do it over here. Number five. Where are we? Waste management. You ever hear them, folks?
Yeah.
You know, people talk about Facebook and Apple and Google. Are they going to be around 30, 40, 50 years from now?
Yes.
I don't know about Facebook.
Oh, no.
I think Google is probably going to be around.
Yeah.
Apple? Probably. I don't know. But is waste management going to be around, or is somebody doing it? Because what do? They pick up the trash. And is somebody going to be picking up the trash 100 years from now? Who knows? Maybe we'll just drop it in this thing and it'll incinerate it. Who knows? Well, that's going to happen. But I have a funny feeling. Right? They'll probably be the ones that wind up owning it. Who knows? But, this is one of my favorite companies, folks. Have you noticed I try my best not to tell you which companies to buy? I don't say, this is the kind of company you should buy. But you know what?
Pick one of your
This is the kind of company you should buy. Somebody who picks up the trash. Like, yuck. Oh, yeah. They're going to be around forever. Now, whether or not they, you know, sometimes one company is badly managed and another company, but there are two big companies in this, Waste Management and Republic, and they're both pretty well managed. So they're selling for around $36.75. They are paying this year $1.42 in dividends. And we find that they've been growing their dividend at about 6%. And where did we get that? Value line, or the company says it, that we intend to continue to do it, or we just look at it, that we do our own data. And our expected constant dividend growth rate, and our expected rate of return, our required rate of return, whatever you want to use, we'll use required rate of return, is equal to 10%. All right, so what do we do? First of all, which model do you use? When you hear they've been growing dividends at a constant rate? Constant perpetual growth model, which is, sounds like Department of Redundancy Department. Constant perpetual growth model. And the formula is very similar to the zero growth model. It's our annual dividends divided by our required rate of return, except we add these terms that account for the fact that the dividend is growing. We multiply that times 1 plus the growth rate of the dividends, and we subtract the required rate of return by the growth rate of the dividends. So growth rate of dividends, and this is on the formula sheet. And so what are the numbers? Let's put them down here. So what's the dividends? Everyone should say 1.42. What's the dividend? Oh, good. Times 1 plus 6%, which is the constant dividend growth rate, 0.06. So that's 1.06. And then we divide that by our required rate of return, which we believe is
10%.
That is up to us. We're the ones who are saying we are trying for 10%, or we're trying for 8%, or we're trying for 12%. And we subtract that by the constant dividend growth rate of 6%. And so now we have $1.42 times 1.06, $1.50. Right on the money? $1.50? That's good enough. You don't have to remember. You don't have to avoid the illusion of precision. And then this is 0.1 minus 0.06 or 0.04. And so how much do we think it's worth?
3763.
Did everybody get that? Make sure you did. Come on, you got to do this by yourself on Tuesday. I can't. Where's your calculator? Well, get it out there. Come on. Oh, he's away. Okay. I want everybody to, you know, I want everybody to understand this. There are some students who go, well, I just won't do that.
We won't do that. Get out of here.
You do it. You do it. You can do it.
I can't do it. What do you mean I can't do it?
5-year-old.
It's not. That's the thing. These calculations are not that hard. They're more conceptually difficult. I mean, what's going on here?
Well, the dividends are growing.
They are?
Yeah, look, they've been growing them for the last 50 years.
Oh, okay.
How do we do that? There's the formula.
Oh, okay, I can do that.
You don't have to derive it. It's already been done.
All right, so number 5, okay? Would you buy Waste Management? The market is selling it for $36.75. We believe it's worth $37.63. So for us, it's not a bad deal, right? Not a screaming good deal, but shoot, I'd be happy with 10%. I don't know about you. I get 8%. I'm a happy man. Okay, next caller. Yes, sir.
So what number did you get for 10% minus
1.06? 0.04. 0.10 minus 0.06 is, does that look like a 4? I'm sorry. 0.04. Okay. Yeah, 10% is point B. That's, some people get messed up. This 6% is not 0.6. Alright, some people, they really screw up. It is 0.06. Just divide by 100 if you're confused by that. It's what? Right, it's in the ones place. But people get messed up. They'll do 6%, 0.6. No, 0.06. All right, now, number 6. Have you ever heard of Yum Brands? Yum Brands?
Yes.
Yes, you have.
Hello.
Taco Smell, Pizza Crap, and Kentucky Fried Wrap. And they are kicking McDonald's butt in China. You think I'm kidding? I'm not. It turns out the Chinese prefer chicken more than they do beef. And the cool thing to do now is to get into your Buick, drive to the McDonald's or the KFC, drive through, and go home, even though it takes you a whole lot longer than just walking there. Because now they know you have a car. Okay, fine. So, Yum Brands is currently selling for around $64 per share. Their dividends for the next 3 years are, they said $1.34 now, and we believe next year our value line tells us $1.46 and then $1.58 for 2015. And we forecast the price, or maybe we look at value line, to be approximately $86 at the end of 2015. If we desire a rate of return of 11% using the discounted cash flow model, would we consider this a good investment? Now, what I hope you will do is construct that spreadsheet. And I wish I had laptops so I could give everybody to do it when we are in class on the exam. It makes it a whole lot easier, but we don't. I apologize. So I'm going to do it, and if you have questions about what I'm doing, just ask. But what I do is I put down the years, 2013, 2014, 2015. This is what we did on Tuesday, remember? And then I put cash flows, or sometimes I'll write the word future cash flows. So what do we expect for dividends in 2013?
$1.34.
Does everybody see where you get that from?
Yeah.
In 2014? $1.46. And then what happens in 2015? We believe we're going to get $1.58, plus we believe we're going to be able to sell the stock, or the stock will be worth $86. So we combine those two, and what do we have for our future cash flow for 2015? $87.58. Does everybody understand that?
I just think it makes life a lot easier. You could do one for each. You could do a row for each, but then you're going to get confused because these the $1.58 is in 2015 and the $86 is in 2015, and people will get screwed up when that happens. This is the dividends earnings model or the discounted cash flow model. How about it got real quiet all of a sudden? Yes?
Which one's your ask? So you got the 87.68
because you have
the
1.68. Okay. Quarter hard, work for a row. Okay, the dividend for 2015 is what?
1.58.
And we believe, or we looked at Value Line, or with somebody else, we listened to somebody else, and they said, we believe Yum is going to be $86 in 3 years. So we add those two because those two are potential future cash flows.
And then
they're the exact same year.
Okay. Then why are we not adding like the 86 to like
1.34? No, because we're not going to sell it in the next year. We're going to sell it in 3 years. At the end of 2015.
Okay.
Okay, so now, next step is we need the present value multipliers at, did I say 10%? 11%. So here's where you need to go to the table. And Rachel is already way ahead of us.
Yeah.
What are the three future value multipliers? Rachel? Oh, you want him to do it? Okay. You're so saying she wanted to do it. Okay. 0. No, now he doesn't want to do it. Now you made him feel bad. 8 what?
901.
812. And then the third one?
731.
Everybody see that? On there, right there. Go across 11%. No, go up. Go all the way up top. And then go down 1, 2, 3. All right.
Those are the years.
Those are the years, right. First year, second year, third year. Now, what's going to happen is we're going to multiply each one of these. And we're going to wind up you don't have to write anything at the top, but these are our discounted cash flows. In other words, what is that $1.34 a year from now worth to us today? So multiply $1.34 times 0.909, 1.207. Yeah, you know, don't worry about putting so many digits. You know, if your calculator has 4, that's good enough.
Is that a 1 or a 7?
That's the 7, I hope. Okay. And what's $1.46 times 0.810? 812? 1.185. And what's $87.58 times 0.731?
64.020.
Yeah, tell me. That's good. That's good. Add them up.
$66.41.
And so we take a look at Yum Brands and say, hey, we think it's worth $66.41, right?
Yeah.
But the market is pricing it at $64. So is that a good deal for us? Hey, you 11%? You know, I'd be happy with that. No, he Mr. Avila, he wants much better than that. No, he wants a much better rate of return on his money. And that's why there are chocolate and vanilla and some people like strawberry, right? The Germans have a saying, it doesn't translate well, but it's called that's what makes horse races. If everybody bet on the same horse, it wouldn't be a race, right? You understand? I don't know. It doesn't translate well, but I like it. That's what makes a market. The fact that some people look at it and say, cool, 11%. I'm buying Yum. I'd be like, ah, screw that. I want Apple. I want, you know, if it triples in 3 years, folks, I want you to figure out, you as an exercise, figure out what kind of rate of return that is. If it triples in 3 years, anybody take a guess? No, not 300. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, 300%. No, but it wouldn't be 300%. It would, think about it. It's a 300% jump, right? But it happens over 3 years. And it's not 100%. It's not 100%. Because if it's 100%, then it would be 100%, it would double. And then it would double again the second year. And then it would double, it would, you know, be quite, it would be, you know, it's a lot. It's a, just figure it out. Figure it out. Okay, number seven. December 7th. Let's finish this up. The price of BioLace, which is a real company, folks, they're up based up in Irvine, I think, is currently around $3.50. All right? Number 7. That's the price. The company is currently losing money, pays no dividends. They're a biotech company. But it has patents on teeth cleaning and whitening technologies that should be very popular and very profitable in the future. The average of the analyst estimates for the stock price next year is $3.73. We believe that in 5 years, the stock will be selling for $6.50. If our desired rate of return is 14%, I think, Mr. Avila, would you be happy with 14%?
Sure.
Okay. Would this be a good buy? Now, wait a minute. No dividends. So which model can we use?
Zero.
Nope. Can't use the zero, can't use the constant, but we can use the discounted cash flows. What is the value of the dividends?
Zero.
No dividends?
Zero.
But in 5 years, we think it's going to be worth $6.50. So how do we discount this? 5 years, 14%, go across 14%, down 5 years.
0.519.
Derek says 0.519. 0.519. Oops. So zero is zero. 60. Everybody, whoa, got real quiet. $6.50 times what? 14% at 5 years. If you go across 14%,
okay.
You go down 5 years. You see that, Joe?
Yes.
Eddie, you see that?
Yes.
Okay. So what's 650 times
0.519?
How much?
$3.37.
Right? Plus, a company that pays no dividends and losing money? Is that the kind of company you want to own?
No.
Unless you worked for the company and you knew that they were going to approve all these whitening things and they're, what? No, if you knew that. I mean, if you worked there, if you had inside information, if you knew that they were going to approve it, yeah, that would be illegal. Yeah, but if you, I should have said, if you were pretty confident, you didn't know, hey, you didn't have inside information, forget it. Zip that up, yeah. Okay, we'll come back to that later. All right, so what do you think? Can you do this? That's the same model as we did up here, except there's no dividends. The dividends are a big fat zero. So we take the price of the stock when we expect to sell, and we multiply it times the present value multiplier, in this case, for 5 years at 14%. It's the same model. It's the same model, and it's the only model we can use in this that we've done. It's a residual income model that you can do if you want to, but it's the same as the constant perpetual model. Not quite, but it's, yeah, basically the same idea. But here, this is the one we can use if there's no dividends. So that might be one that's like a biotech company or something like that. You with me? Now, this is the kind of company that's very, very risky. Should you fill up your plate with these kind of companies?
No,
please don't. If you want, this is the kind of company I was a sucker for, folks. 99% of my portfolio would be the big monster companies and that and that. And then I would search San Diego for these biotech companies that have this incredibly fantastic technology that's going to revolutionize the world, and they go bankrupt and I lost my money. Okay. All right. Let's continue. All right. So now, that was chapter 6. Now, we have a little bit of time, and have you ever known me to waste any of your time? What? The joke stops. That's my one exception. I got to have a little bit of a waste of time. I got to have a little bit of waste of time. So I'm going to take 10 minutes and show you that there's more to this story. But none of this is going to be on the exam, so don't get worried. Since we have a little bit of extra time, I thought I would treat you to what you have in store if you ever went to the university level and started taking finance classes, upper division, graduate level finance, all right? Because they just, it's the same crap that we're doing now, but they make it sound more exciting. If you recall, the value of a stock is based on the present value, what we believe it is worth today, of the future cash flows. Dividends, stock prices, interest payments, principal payments. But present value is not limited to stocks and bonds. We can calculate the present value of a future stream of income from any source. Real estate, factories, bridges, water projects, nuclear reactors. You already know how to do this now. The problem is it can get pretty gnarly when you have 30 years. Do you want to do, where is it? Where's the thing? Hand up. Do you want to do 30 years of calculation? No, that's why we have spreadsheets. That's why we have spreadsheets. So I'm going to skip the internal rate of return crap. Here, remember the formula, recall. The present value told us what we thought the future stream of income was worth today. And so we're going to use the spreadsheet to calculate internal rate of return. So forget these guys, internal rate of return. We're going to use the spreadsheet to calculate internal rate of return. Where was it? This is a very popular measure that business people and investors use when measuring the rate of return from a stream of future income. You will also learn how to calculate the internal rate of return manually if you go on to an upper division or graduate level, and hopefully your professor will only make you do it once because it's painful. It's a pain in the neck. Specifically, the internal rate of return is the desired required rate of return where the net present value equals zero. Huh? Yeah, let's take a look at the spreadsheet. So look for that if you want, but it's not going to be on the exam. But let's take a look at the where did it go? Here it is. Here's the spreadsheet. Does this look familiar? Here is the one we did last Tuesday. The Pretzels Unlimited it was. Yeah, Pretzels Unlimited. And so we showed you that the cash flows discounted were equal to $23.80. The market price was $22. And then we used the net present value function. I'm not going to do that. Forget that. But let's continue. I'm losing you, I can tell. But that's okay. Don't worry about it. Okay, forget that. Internal rate of return. All right, now here. Forget the bonds. Okay, here is a duplex. We'll get the bonds later. Yeah, a duplex. What is it worth to me? Well, what does it cost to buy a duplex now in Chula Vista? Anybody know? About $300,000. You can spend more. It's hard to spend less. Just about 8 months ago, they were selling for $250. Now they hit $275. Now they seem to hit $300. Fewer, more expensive if they're in better neighborhoods. So you have to come up with how much money? Do you really? No, you don't really. But let's say you have $300,000 laying around the house. Let's say you have $300,000, and there are some people who do this. There are people who are buying these places cash. And if you're in the market now, you're fighting up against these people who can come to the table with cash. They say, we'll pay cash. And the buyer goes, and the seller goes, really? Then you don't have to worry about the loan company. Okay, no financing. So let's say you had $300,000. Now let's say that duplex is going to turn about $24,000 in income over the next 30 years, right? Well, rents go up, don't they? So what I've included in this spreadsheet is the fact that the rent is going up about 2%. Let me make this a little bigger. Let me make it bigger. I forget. Yeah, please. Someone turn off the lights. Okay. All right, that's about as big as I can make it. All right? So what I did is I said, okay, it's going to give us about $24,000 of rent the first year, and then I've increased it 2% every year for the next 30 years. And at the end of the 30 years, I said, it's probably going to be worth about $720,000. Maybe $750,000, probably a little conservative. So I plug in those numbers. I type internal rate of return, the formula down here, we showed you this on Tuesday, internal rate of return for C3, the initial cash outflow, I had to come up with $300,000, all the way down for all the rent, and then what I sold it for at the end of 30 years for $722, and it tells me my internal rate of return is about 10%. Now, would you be happy with 10% rate of return on real estate?
Oh, yeah.
Now, I would be too, but think about it. You already told me. Do people actually put down $300,000? Do they pay cash? Some people are doing that now. But normally, during normal times, somebody's going to come to the table with $60,000. And they're going to finance it. The bank is going to pay the other $200,000. Well, they're going to lend you the money. So really what we should do is change this to $60,000 because that's our initial cash flow. So we need to, it's got to be negative, $60,000. And now all of a sudden the internal rate of return goes to 42%. Wait a minute, what do I have to put into the cash flows?
Your land.
The fact that most of that money ain't going to me in the first several years, you understand? Much of that money is going to who?
The
bank, the mortgage company. And that's why whenever you walk into a bank, they're always so nice to you. Okay. When you grow up, folks, you want to be a bank. Trust me, okay? If the doors are open, they're making money. So you understand? We have to finagle this a little bit to get a better rate of return. We should knock this, I'm not going to do it now, but we should knock that $24,000 down to $8,000 or $7,000 and then have it grow over time as the loan goes down and as rents go up. Are you with me? Nod your head yes? Or am I going too fast?
Can you make like an example real quick?
Let me just start this at, say, $7,000 or $6,000.
Where did you get that number?
I'm just guessing. I'm guessing because I have to pay. I'm guessing that I'm paying a mortgage. I'm paying a mortgage and property taxes and all that stuff.
With a $300,000 apartment.
Right, with a $300,000 duplex.
You're paying $6,000
in mortgage? No, I'm paying more. I'm paying like $18,000 in interest. But as the rent goes up and the mortgage goes down, I'm going to be getting more money back. So now, because I only put 60% down, it's telling me that the rate of return is actually 14%. Are you with me? I can't go into it now because I'll create an example for you. But this is what I want to really show you. Now, when you get into graduate level finance, they're going to show you examples like this. How much does a nuclear reactor cost, folks?
$150 million.
Billion, right. It's in the billions. So let's say it's a small reactor. It costs... You do? Buy SDG&E. What's the one that owns... Not Sempra. Sempra doesn't own... Who owns it? Pacific Gas and Electric? No, is that the right... Southern California Edison. They own... Ask them how well it's turning out. San Onofre. Okay, so you buy a nuclear reactor for $1.8 billion, and it's going to give you $250 million in income over the next 20 years, 25 years. And then what do you got to do? You have to decommission it. You have to get rid of it. And that costs $1 billion to get rid of it. So you understand?
Wow.
Are you with me?
Yeah.
The initial cash flow is $1.8 billion. You're going to get $250 or $400 million or whatever you're going to get for the next 30 years. And then you got to pay $1 billion to get rid of the darn thing. So you see how internal rate of return calculations can do some really wild things.
Right.
Because not everything works the same. And this tells us that it's worth about 8.5% to us, internal rate of return. The problem with internal rate of return is it can make some strange results. And you're going to learn this if you go to a finance class at the upper level. Which investment would you rather have? One that you paid $1,000 the first year and you got back $1,500. Or one where you were given $1,000 in the first year and had to pay $1,500 the next year.
Number one.
You'd rather have the first one, right? They both are 50% returns. Internal rate of return says they're both giving you 50%. What? The doesn't say to whom. Yeah, right. Yeah, you don't want this one. But the internal rate of return calculations as well, they're essentially the same. So you got to be careful with internal rate of return. So what do you think? You now know, even though you don't know all the details or anything, but you know how to create a cash flow using the computer, which is a lot easier than using that table, for 40 years of a building or a bridge or a water authority or a nuclear reactor, and this is what you learn in graduate level class. Okay. All right, Tuesday. Make sure I get everybody's turn lights on, please. Get everybody's homework. Get everybody who came in on time. Do well. Study hard. Wait a minute. Don't